南無妙法蓮華経、南無妙法蓮華経、南無妙法蓮華経。Hi everyone, good friends. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for being here. We are starting the chapter 7 of the Lotus Sutra, the parable of the conjured city. This is the final explanation for what has occurred prior to the Lotus Sutra, whereby students, monks, everyone in the assembly, were given a goal of practice of nirvana. But that nirvana was not the ultimate nirvana. That nirvana was yet another step along the way to realizing our Buddha potential. You'll see from the parable that this false nirvana, this counterfeit dharma, this semblance dharma, this teaching was given as a goal to those monks, those in the assembly, whether bhikshus, bhikshunis, or upasakas, upasikas, right? That because the practice, learning about how the mind works in our saha world, and the way samsara, the mind of samsara works to constantly attach us to things, possession, control, identification. It's complex. It takes a lot of work to realize, self-realize what is occurring and what we think of, right, as real, but is in fact only real by how dear and invested we are in identity. You hear the echo of the word ego here, right? That ego is a constructed thing that exists in our fundamental saha world mind, the human mind, to identify itself. And it does so by identifying everything. It's a hell of a processor we have in our heads, yeah? But now, reality in order to become free. Why do we need to free it from that? Because that mechanism, though it's amazing, astounding, serves us well in many ways, is also the very thing that causes us stress, anxiety. Because certainly, if I know what that is, and that helps me to define what I is, then more of that can only help constitute a more stable, more strong I. But here's the conundrum of that. No matter how much of that, this, those, them, that I possess, accrue, I never feel complete. So I'm always, no matter how many dollars I own, I still don't feel solid. And what Buddhism says is that the reason you don't feel solid is because you're basing your solidity on stuff that is empty of reality, that it's just going to disappear. It's temporary. It arises and it decays and it goes away. Everything you're identifying is empty, impermanent, has no self-nature. And that's why you feel that way, because you're basing your identity on stuff that arises, decays, and goes away. So you never feel secure. And that lack of security, of being, feels more like just plummeting through life. Like you have no control. But what if I told you that if you trained your mind on the actuality of things, moment to moment to moment to moment, and immerse yourself, engage with that process of being, there is no other way for you to feel all there, complete, whole. With that mindset, you can experience being in your entirety. And there's no point stressing about it. There's no stress to it because you're just busily being along with the momentum of your life. You are experiencing the moment of your living. It's all happening. It's all, right? Those moments of experience, that's the true I. The individuation of I is the samsaric I, the I of the cosmos, the I, now I'm playing with words, the I of Buddha is the true being, life, amazement, wholeness. But working toward that for decades, these monks were like, I don't know, I'm perfectly happy with, you know, when I grew up, we all knew we reincarnated, we lived after death. It's comforting. It's comforting. We don't have to worry about this temporary life. Ah, we'll leave it behind. That new place will be where everything is. No, no, no. This is why Nichiren railed so hard against Nembutsu, right? Paying homage to Amida Buddha. Well, Amida Buddha isn't... It's a thought experiment, because Amida never existed, right? That's a construct of Shakyamuni's to explain something yet again that these followers just weren't, they weren't getting. Talking about the Pure Land. Right? Well, I will chant, and then I will enable me to go to the Pure Land of Amida Buddha. No, the Pure Land, if you read the Vimalakirti, you don't even need to read the Lotus Sutra, right? Go to a prior Mahayana teaching, the Vimalakirti, a very wise man, right? Points out to everyone who's coming to visit him and see if he's okay, because he let out a rumor that he was ill. And between him and Buddha-ness, he explains that the Pure Land isn't any other place. This is where the Pure Land is. Well, no, that's where my stuff is, my lawnmower, my friends, my... Yes, because you're looking at everything samsarically. Now shift your mind with your Buddha eye, your Gohonzon mind, kick open that Gohonzon gate, and now see all of the same stuff, but witness it, experience it as a moment-to-moment, along with you, happening, living, not something that just you own, that it's happening all on its own, and you with it. What do you mean? How does that work? I just don't think I can do it. I quit. Well, he's got a lot of dedicated students by then. All right. What if I just teach you with everything you're doing to just learn how to do that? Let go of everything as a permanent thing, ownership, samsara, and just divest yourself of your attachments to things. That doesn't mean you can't have them. Oh, but that's the way most of them heard it, right? Prohibitions against this, prohibition. All those prohibitions are about releasing your constant craving for and clinging for things. Just the Four Noble Truths all over again. Same thing, teaching it over and over again in different ways, but just they're not getting it. They're not getting it. So, okay, forget about attaining Buddhahood. It'll never happen. It's you're just not getting it, right? You've scorched the seeds of Buddhahood. Instead, aim for nirvana, just a release of this stuff that makes you suffer. Okay, I think I can do that. And so for years and years, this is the early practices of Buddhism. This was the goal that Sravakas, Pratyeka Buddhas, Arhats, all, which are just very accomplished versions of Sravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, were aiming for. And a lot of them ended up living in caves or in forests or so, just trying to get away from. Right? Even at the beginning, it was all about monasteries. Let's just put them in a freaking box so they're not constantly distracted. Over time, they get released from the box, right? And these human beings, like you and I, reintroduced to society, are like, ooh, I really feel the pull of these distractions, right? Earthly desires, Nichiren would say. But just like the Pure Land is here, just a paradigm shift in the mind, Nichiren would teach that those very same distractions, things that make us cling and crave, can be used through the power of our practice, through our mandala, to kick open, really demand that Gohonzon mind open. Take those energies of, man, that looks so good, and turn toward the mandala and say, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, looks so good. Take that same energy and pour it into opening your Buddha eye. Yeah, that kind of determination. And then you instantiate your Buddha nature, your Buddha eye. Your wanton cravings and desires, they dissolve into a sort of an effervescent bubbling up in your body. You can feel it when you really connect, right? Fuse with the mandala, not the mandala, but the representation of the mandala. Fuse with the Gohonzon mind. The mandala as your entry point. See my mind of Gohonzon. Oh, Buddha. Exciting. But at this stage, at these earlier stages before the lotus, no one was endeavoring to do that. That's why you hear all these stories of these monks. We never took joy in going there. We never felt committed to going there, right? So here it is, the Conjured City. Why this all happened. The Buddha addressed the monks and nuns, saying, of long ago in the past, infinite, boundless, and inconceivable asamkaya kalpas ago, there was then a Buddha named Universal Surpassing Wisdom, a Tathagata instantiation, worthy of praise, all-wise, perfectly enlightened in conduct, well-departed, understander of the world, peerless leader, controller, teacher of universal realms of influence and men, Buddha, world-honored one, whose domain was named Well-Completed. So he constructs again another example of what people take Shakyamuni to be. But he doesn't want to say, I did this, I did that, you did that, right? He's telling a story as an image, a reflection of what he's doing. But, you know, this is the method of teaching, right? So he sets up another imaginary Buddha. And whose kalpa was named Great Form, bhikshus and bhikshunis. Since that Buddha became extinct, a very long time has passed. Okay. For instance, suppose the earth element in a 3,000 greatfold, 1,000 world world were by someone ground into ink. So imagine this world, the solar system, the galaxy, everything you see in the sky at night. You took all of those things and you ground them up into a very fine powder to make ink. Yeah, it's hyperbole, but the example twist the mind a little bit, but that's the purpose, yeah? And he were to pass through 1,000 countries in an eastern direction. Now we're back on earth. And then he let fall one drop of this ink, as large as a grain of dust. Again, passing through another 1,000 countries, again let fall one drop for every 1,000 countries. Suppose he thus proceeds until he has finished the ink made of the earth element. What is your opinion? All these countries, is it possible for mathematicians or their disciples to find their end or confines so as to know their number? Well, of course not. This is unimaginable, right? Bhikshunis, suppose all those countries which that man had passed, where he had dropped a drop of that ink, and where he had not, were ground to dust once again, and let one grain of that dust be a kalpa. Okay, it's already immeasurable, innumerable, incalculable, right? All of those words. But now we're going to make each of those grains, those that's incalculable, stand for a kalpa. In other words, a very long time. Or an eon, as is sometimes said. The time since that Buddha became extinct till now exceeds those numbers by, again, innumerable, unlimited, 100,000 myriad kodas of asamkaya kalpas. Okay, we get it. It was a long time ago. In other words, the birth of the frickin' universe. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about Tathagata. Okay? By the power of my Tathagata wisdom, I observe that length of time as if it was only today. Well, this morning, incalculable, innumerable, blah, 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 blah. Wow, you can see that far into the past. Yeah, the birth of the universe. Observe again the use of time compression to indicate mental sensation or impression rather than linear ideas of time. Note by me. At that time, the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. Let me make this something you memorize. I remember in a past world, immeasurable infinite kalpas ago, a Buddha, a most honored man, named Universal Surpassing Wisdom. That would be a name for Tathagata, yeah? Suppose someone, by his power, ground a 3,000 great thousandfold world with its entire earth element entirely into ink powder, and passing 1,000 countries, then let fall one particle of ink drop. Proceeding in like manner, he drops all the atomized ink, just continuously, I mean. Proceeding in like manner, he drops all the atomized ink. Well, I mean, that would be more than the earth could hold. But at that time, the earth was not that explored, so it seemed infinite, right? So he's, keep in mind who he's talking to. Suppose all such countries as these, those ink powder drop particle dropped, and those between that he'd not dropped, again are entirely ground to dust. And we're past the point of ridiculousness, right? And a grain be as a kalpa. The number of those grains are exceeded by his kalpas. The beginning of the cosmos, yeah? Since that Buddha became extinct, such are the measureless kalpas. I, the Tathagata, embodied in the body of Shakyamuni, by unhindered wisdom, know the extinction of that Buddha and his Shravakas and Bodhisattvas as if it were occurring right now. Well, it is, but okay. Now, bhikshus and bhikshunis, the Buddha wisdom is pure and granular, faultless and unhindered, penetrating through infinite kalpas. In other words, time is irrelevant to Buddha-ness. right? Because as everything is happening moment to moment to moment, and you're experiencing those successive moments, the trail, the linearness of time is irrelevant. Everything is now into the next, into the next, into the next. How can I participate in this action into the next? That's the formations formula, right? From energy through formations expressed, the realms of form expressed. Karma. That's what we're wanting to experience, that momentum of karma. And that's what we're wanting to influence and hone and participate fully in, instead of just the tendencies that are in that freight train, that amalgam of karma that we're living. We don't want to just let it play out and go, oh, that was interesting. I wish this, I wish that, I wish this. No wishing. Be there. Enable all of the best tendencies to take hold, because you're in it. You're driving. Don't be a passenger in your life. Then the Buddha addressed all the bhikshus and bhikshunis, saying, the lifetime of the Buddha, universal surpassing wisdom, is 540 myriad kotas of nayutas of kalpas. At the beginning, when that Buddha seated on the wisdom throne, had destroyed the army of Mara, any and all obstacles that attach us to the Saha world, though he was on the point of attaining perfect enlightenment, the Buddha laws were not yet revealed to him. So for a minor kalpa, and then onward for 10 minor kalpas, he sat cross-legged with body and mind motionless. But the Buddha laws were not revealed to him. Interesting. He's a Buddha, but the Buddha laws aren't revealed to him? This is a little confusing. What are you getting at, Shakyamuni? Then the universal realms of influence of the 33 heavens, right? And there's a definition in the Buddhism reference book that I wrote and made available as an ebook or print book. Volume 2 is actually now both volumes, 1 and 2, put together. So you can get it all in one book, right? In case you didn't catch that. I go into those 33 heavens or trilococlasm, that word, realms. Spread for that Buddha a lion throne, a Johanna high, under a Bodhi tree, so that the Buddha on this throne should attain perfect enlightenment. Is he talking about himself? Because this sounds a lot like his experience, doesn't it? The throne he speaks of is seated under the Bodhi tree. And he sits on this lion throne, and he feels like he's 8 miles in the air. And says, Bodhi tree, so that the Buddha on this throne should attain perfect enlightenment. Sounds like biographical information there, right? No sooner had he sat on that throne than the Brahma heavenly kings rained down celestial flowers over an area of 100 Johannas. A fragrant wind from time to time arose, sweeping away the withered flowers and raising fresh ones. Thus, incessantly, during full 10 minor kalpas, they paid honor to the Buddha, and even till his extinction, they constantly rained those flowers, while the universal realms of influence belonging to the 4 heavenly kings, to honor the Buddha, constantly beat celestial drums, and other universal realms of influence performed celestial music during fully 10 minor kalpas, and continued so to do until his extinction. So, again, as we see him experience time, Shakyamuni can experience all of that in a minute. But it feels expansive. You've heard me use that word before, right? The Buddha eye is expansive. It makes your life and mine expansive. Much, much more immense than our current samsaric vision of self as this flesh and blood body. How can that be? Because that life of the Buddha eye is in the mind. It's not restricted by this saha world of things. Bhikshus and bhikshunis, after the lapse of 10 minor kalpas, the Buddha universal surpassing wisdom attained the Buddha laws, and perfect enlightenment was revealed to him. Right? So, obviously, if perfect enlightenment was revealed to him, what was extinct? Not the Buddha, the Tathagata, the connection completed, now embodied in this Buddha, was all existing in this mind, this one of mind, just like Shakyamuni. Okay. Before that Buddha left home, he had 16 sons, the eldest of which was named Wisdom Store. Of each of his sons had various kinds of valued amusements, but on hearing that their father had accomplished perfect enlightenment, they all gave up their things they valued and went to pay their regards to the Buddha. Their weeping mothers escorted them because they were leaving home. They wouldn't have them to help around the house anymore or to care for or to be attached to. Their grandfather, profound wheel-rolling king, with his 100 ministers and also 100,000 myriad kodas of his people, all surrounded and followed them to the terrace of enlightenment, all desiring to draw near to the Tathagata embodied in universal surpassing wisdom and to serve, revere, honor, and extol him. After their arrival, they did homage before his feet with their heads, and after making procession around him with folded hands and in one mind, Buddha, they gazed up to the world-honored one and praised him in verse, saying, "The world-honored one of great might to save all living beings after measureless kodas of years, great sage of the Shakyas." Who's the great sage of the Shakyas? Shakyamuni. It's infused with his own biography, this story. "Has now become a Buddha and perfected all your vows." So he's going back to the beginning here, yeah? "Good indeed is our fortune unsurpassed, for rarely do world-honored ones appear in this Saha world. At one sitting, 10 minor kalpas have passed. Your body and limbs still peaceful and motionless, and with mind ever tranquil, never distracted." "The thus come one has completed eternal nirvana, and does calmly dwell in the faultless law." Auto spell correct can some light make mistakes too. "Now, seeing the world honored one who has calmly accomplished the Buddha way, we have attained good fortune and congratulate ourselves with great joy. All the living are ever suffering, blind and without a leader, unaware of the way to end pain, knowing not to seek deliverance. Through the long night, deluded and malicious ways have increased, diminishing the heavenly throng. The world has passed from darkness into darkness, never hearing the Buddha's name. But now the Buddha has attained the supreme pacific faultless law, and we as well as universal realms of influence and men gain great fortune. Therefore, we all prostrate ourselves and offer our lives to the peerless honored one." Thereupon, all these 16 royal sons, when they had extolled the Buddha in verse, entreated the world-honored one to roll the law wheel, saying, "O world-honored one, teach the law and abundantly comfort, have compassion for, and benefit both universal realms of influence and men." Repeating it in verse, they said, "Hero of the world, incomparable, adorned with 100 auspicious signs, who has attained to supreme wisdom, be pleased to teach the world for deliverance to us and to all classes of the living. Discriminate and reveal it so that we may obtain this wisdom. If we attain Buddhahood, all other living beings will also attain it. World-honored one, the Buddha knows what the living in their deepest minds are thinking, the ways in which they walk, their capacities for wisdom, their pleasures and past good works, the karma repercussions their former life produced. World-honored one, the Buddha knows all of these. Be pleased to roll along the peerless wheel of the Dharma. The Buddha then said to the bhikshus, when the Buddha, universal surpassing wisdom, attained perfect enlightenment, the 500 myriad kodas of Buddha worlds in all directions were each shaken in six different ways, even the dark places between those realms where the august light of the sun and moon could not shine, all became brilliant. Visible, yeah? All the living beings in their midst could see each other and unitedly exclaim, from where have all these living beings suddenly come? Moreover, the palaces of the universal realms of influence and all those regions, even Brahma palaces, shook in six different ways and a great light universally shone, filling all the worlds, surpassing the light from the heavens. Then, eastward, all the palaces of the Brahma heavens in the 500 myriad kodas of domains were brilliantly illuminated with double their normal brightness, and each of those Brahma heavenly kings reflected thus. For what reason does this sign appear? That our palaces are now illuminated as never of long ago. Then those Brahma heavenly kings all visited each other to discuss this affair. Meanwhile, amongst those assembled, there was a great Brahma heavenly king named Savior of All, who addressed the host of Brahmas in verse. In all our palaces, he says, never has there been such a shining. What can be the cause of this? Let us together investigate it. Is it that a great virtuous God is born? Is it that a Buddha appears in the world? That this great shining everywhere illuminates the universe? Thereupon the Brahma heavenly kings in the 500 myriad kodas of domains with all their palace train, each taking a sack filled with celestial flowers, went together to visit the western quarter to investigate this sign. There they saw the Tathagata embodied in the universal surpassing wisdom on the wisdom terrace under the Bodhi tree, seated on the lion throne, surrounded and revered by universal realms of influence, dragon kings, Gandharvas, Kimnaras, Mahoragas, human and non-human beings and others. In other words, all of life surrounding Shakyamuni. And they saw his 16 royal sons entreating the Buddha to roll along the law wheel. Now, does that mean that Shakyamuni has 16 sons? No. We're still in a story here. I'm just pointing out that it's very autobiographical, isn't it? Then all the Brahma heavenly kings bowed to the ground before the Buddha, made procession around him hundreds and thousands of times, and then strewed the celestial flowers upon him. The flowers they strewed rose like Mount Sumeru and were offered also to the Buddha's Bodhi tree. They were just like in awe, right? That Bodhi tree was 10 yohanas in height, 80 miles. Anyway, more hyperbole, yes? When they had offered the flowers, each of them presented his palace to the Buddha and spoke thus, out of compassion for us and our good, and for our good, please condescend to accept the palaces we offer. Thereupon all the Brahma heavenly kings before the Buddha with one mind and one voice praised him in verse, saying, rare is a world-honored one, hard it is to meet him, perfect in infinite merit, able to liberate all, great teachers of the universal realm of influence and men. He has compassion for the world, all living beings in the universe, everywhere receive his aid. The distance we have come is 500 myriad kodas of domains. leaving deep meditative joys for the sake of serving the Buddha. As rewards for our former lives, our palaces are magnificently adorned. Now we offer them to the world-honored one and beseech him in mercy to accept. What does the world-honored one need? What does Buddha-ness need of wealth? But with the spirit of your joy and your wanting to make some kind of saha mark for your pledge, I will condescend to accept. Even though it does nothing for me, I can see it's meaningful for you. Okay, right? Then when the Brahma heavenly kings had extolled the Buddha in verse, each spoke thus, each of them. Be pleased, world-honored one, to roll the law wheel, deliver the living, and open the nirvana way. Then the Brahma heavenly kings with one mind and voice spoke thus in verse. Hero of the world, honored of men, be pleased to proclaim the law. By the power of the Buddha's great compassion, emancipate wretched living beings. We're stuck in the cycle of craving and clinging in a samsaric world. Yeah. Again, bhikshus, the great Brahma kings in the southern eastern quarter of 500 myriad kodas of domains, each seeing his own palace radiant with light as never before, were ecstatic with joy and amazed. And instantly all visited each other to discuss together the affair. Meanwhile, amongst those assembled there, was a great Brahma heavenly king whose name was Most Merciful, who addressed the host of Brahmas in verse. What is the cause of this affair? That such a sign should appear in all our palaces, never has there been such a luminous shining. Is it that a great virtuous being is born? Is it that a Buddha appears in the world? We have never seen yet such a sign. Let us with one mind investigate it. Let us pass through 1,000 myriad kodas of lands in search of the light and together explain it. It must be that a Buddha has appeared in the world to save suffering beings, to liberate suffering beings, yes? Thereupon, the 500 myriad kodas of Brahma heavenly kings with all their palaces, each. So this goes on for each quarter, and it's a total repetition of what these Brahmas get together in, to investigate, bring all of the people along with them to go investigate and find Buddha. Yeah. And thereupon the Buddha heavenly kings before the Buddha in one mind voice praised him. So these are Buddhists or Brahmins from another sector of Jambudvipa. Yeah. Revered Lord, King among universal realms of influence, with voice sweet as the Kalavinka, who has compassion for all living beings, we now respectfully salute the world-honored one. Rarely does a world-honored one appear, but once in innumerable long ages. 180 kalpas have passed away, empty, with never a Buddha. The three deluded and malicious regions becoming replete, while heavenly beings decrease. Now the Buddha has appeared in the world to become the eye of all the living beings, the resort of all the world, liberator of all, father of all living, who has compassion for and does good to all. Happy though through our former destinies, we now meet the world-honored one. So this dialogue is shifting between Tathagata, universal, and the embodiment of Tathagata as Buddha in the presence in the Saha world. You following this? It goes back and forth, right? Then when the Brahma heavenly kings had extolled the Buddha in verse, each spoke thus, be pleased, world-honored one, to have compassion for all, roll the law, that and deliver all the beings. Then the Brahma heavenly kings with one mind and voice spoke in verse, most revered, roll the law of the wheel, reveal the nature of the priori laws, deliver us emancipated or suffering beings, right? Deliver us. that they may obtain great joy. All the living hear this law, obtain the way as if born in bliss. Deluded and malicious repercussions of karma decrease, while experiences of goodness increase. Then the Tathagata, embodied universal surpassing wisdom, silently gave assent. He just nodded his head. Again, Bhikshus, the great Brahma kings, this is Shakyamuni speaking now, in the southern quarter of the 500, and we go through this again, right? Here upon the Brahma, and then he gave assent to each of these sections. He gives assent. And it's basically the same story every time. All of these Brahmins, oh my goodness, there must be a Buddha. They all end up in this one spot, yeah? Thereupon all the Brahma heavenly kings before the Buddha with one mind and voice praised him in verse, how good it is to see the Buddhas, revered, honored ones, who emancipate the world, who can compel the hells of the triple world to deliver up the living. Interesting that this says plural Buddhas. I'll have to investigate that. The all-wise, honored of the universal realms of influence and men, out of compassion for the crowds of young buds, can open the doors of the sweet dews for the extensive relief of all. Innumerable kalpas of long ago have emptily passed without Buddhas. While world-honored ones did not appear, darkness has everywhere reigned. Yeah, we already got that, yeah? Thriving were the three deluded and malicious states, flourishing also the Asuras. He's talking about the worlds you all know about, right? Hell, hunger, animality, the three lowest ones. Then the Asuras, world of anger. While the heavenly host dwindled and dying, fell into deluded and malicious estates. In other words, people's minds just keep going to where their basest samsaric existence is, yeah? Not hearing the law from Buddhas, ever flowing improper ways, following improper ways, their bodies, strength, and wisdom, these all dwindle away. Because of sinful karma, sinful errors in karma, repercussions of karma, they lost their joy and joyful thoughts. Fixed in their heretical views, unconscious of the rules of goodness, not receiving the correction of Buddhas, they ever fell into deluded and malicious ways. The Buddha is the eye of the world, and after long ages appears. Through his pity for the living, he is revealed in the world, surpassing in his perfect enlightenment. Great is our felicity, and all other beings rejoice as never before. All our palaces made beautiful through this light, now we offer to the world-honored one. Be pleased, honored among men, to condescend in compassion to accept them. May this deed of merit extend to all creatures, that we with all the living may together accomplish the Buddha way. Thereupon, when the 500 myriad kotas of the Brahma heavenly kings had extolled the Buddha in verse, each said to him, one by one, be pleased, world-honored one, to roll the law wheel, abundantly comfort, abundantly deliver. And then the Brahma heavenly kings spoke in verse, world-honored one, roll the law wheel, beat the drum of the law, sweet as dew, rescue or liberate, emancipate the suffering living, reveal the nirvana way. Be pleased to receive our entreaty, and with your great priori voice, out of compassion, spread abroad the law you have practiced for infinite kalpas, right? Spread the Tathagata wisdom. At that time, the Tathagata, embodied as universal surpassing wisdom, received the entreaty of the Brahma heavenly kings of the 10 regions, and his 16 royal sons at once thrice rolled the law wheel of 12 divisions, right? And you can go to threefoldlotus.com and see a button for the 12 divisions so you can know what those are. They're different types of teachings. which neither Shramanas, Brahmins, universal realms of influence, Maras, Brahmas, nor any other beings of the world are able to roll. His discourse was, this is suffering. This, the accumulation of suffering. This is the extinction of suffering. This is the way to the extinction of suffering. And he extensively set forth the law of the 12 causes, named ignorance, cause action. Actions causes consciousness. Consciousness causes name and form, right? These are the nidana in a different capsule, but you're following that along, right? Fourth, name and form, right? Namarupa cause the six entrances or sense organs. There's the skandhas. Five, the six entrances cause contact. Contact causes sensation. Sensation causes desire. Eight, desire causes clinging. Clinging causes existence, in other words, perpetual existence, which is not real. And 10, existence causes birth. 11, birth causes the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth, grief, lamentation, suffering, and distress. And 12, old age and death cause fear, clinging, sickness, and delusion. There you have it, a Mahayana treatise on the Nidana. And if you look in Buddhism reference, you will see that I've already explained that the 12 Nidana are the same teaching, but evolved in their meaning and their depth throughout the Buddhist teachings, take their form in the Mahayana as a part of the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. We'll get there. All right, I've gone on long enough. Are you enjoying this? This is this chapter. This is another one of those chapters. I know I say that too much, don't I? But man, if you really read this with, especially if you've got Buddhism reference and you look up these words and you can see the meaning of these words, and then as you read this, recall or look it up, it really understanding these terms and these words, understanding the way Buddhism is laid out in this storytelling fashion, really opens up our understanding. And I'm hopeful, because that's what I was meant to do, that sharing this with you will spawn insights of your own. Yeah? Let me know. Let me know what you think in the comments. We'll continue in the next video. But, yeah, the seventh chapter is meaty. All right. Again, I have to thank you. Great appreciation for your being here, for support. Like and subscribe. It's free. Takes a few seconds. Helps the algorithm spread this resource. Yeah. It's a Bodhisattva act, isn't it? It's propagation. All the links in the description. For those of you who are interested in buying ebooks or books or mandalas or accessing free podcast versions of all these videos, those are free as well. Patrons on Patreon and direct to PayPal, all of you are so important to keep this activity going, keep me healthy and able to continue this project. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Just take care of your health and keep your practice strong. That's the most important thing, right? And I will see you in the next video.